Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Mei Nai, who's a professor of history and the Lung Family Professor of Asian American Studies at Columbia University, a legal and political historian interested in questions of immigration, citizenship, and nationalism. She's the author of Impossible Subjects, Illegal Aliens in the Making of Modern America, The Lucky Ones, One Family, and The Extraordinary Invention of Chinese America. And her forthcoming book is The Chinese Question. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mei Nai.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Mei. And about 50 members of this migrant caravan that's coming up from Central America, mostly from El Salvador, arrived at the border at Tijuana, and they were turned away at the port of entry in San Ysidro. And in total, I believe there's, even though there was, a 1,000 or so initially set off from Mexico's southern border, it's dwindled down to about 300 at this point. And yet the President of the United States at a rally on Saturday said that this horde could close down the country. So, and today he's calling for his border wall. So obviously that's a pretty extraordinary exaggeration, is it not?
Well, absolutely. And the whole thing is, I think, at one level, very sad, because these are people who are fleeing violence and many years of violence and civil unrest and now gang-related violence in El Salvador. And, you know, people who show up at our borders and ask for asylum have the right to a hearing. So by turning them away, by not receiving them as asylum seekers, I believe the Border Patrol is not acting lawfully, although I'm not a lawyer, so don't quote me on that. but the point about asylum is that people who are fleeing from persecution, if they present themselves to an immigration officer, they are supposed to be accepted. There's supposed to be an intake, they're supposed to be scheduled for an asylum hearing. That's the normal process. And these are mostly women and children, and some men who are also fleeing from the violence in El Salvador. I think at one level this is a kind of performance kind of politics, both on the part of the administration certainly, but also on the part of the migrants themselves. And I think it's a commentary on how desperate things have become, that people now not only seek entry through lawful means, right, by asking for asylum, but also by appealing to the American public through these dramatic, you know, this dramatic caravan, or, you know, this journey to the border. And I think we have a lot to learn from that, as well as the politics of performance that's being engaged by the administration, which is one of hyperbole, fear-mongering, racist exaggeration, etc.
So is there? Have you ever heard of any discussion about the causes of the instability in these countries and why people flee for their lives, particularly young people? It's no small irony that the main gangs down in El Salvador actually were created here in Los Angeles.
That's right. In the 1980s
during the civil war in El Salvador. But in general, what never enters the discussion is there anything that can be done to make these countries more livable for these young people so that they don't have to take this hazardous and dangerous journey through Mexico to the U.S. border and at this point be stopped?
You know, ever since the Cold War, the United States has practiced a double policy towards refugees and asylum seekers. It has always welcomed people fleeing from communist countries. Well, we hardly have any of those left anymore. But it was always very unfriendly to people fleeing from right-wing dictatorships that were, in fact, allies of the United States. So El Salvador is a case in point. The United States backed a right-wing dictatorship in a very violent civil war that went on for many years. And so, you know, in many ways, the United States is responsible for the impoverishment and the lack of democracy in many countries in the Southern Hemisphere. At the same time, Ian, you know, I don't know if the United States, it's the United States' role to fix all these problems. You know, it could stop interfering, that's for certain. But the United States also, you know, when it gets into the business of regime change, we've seen this in Iraq, we see this now in the Middle East, not a lot good comes of that either.
Well, specifically, the regime change in Iraq has led to instability throughout that region. And if you have massive, I think almost a third or not a half of the population of Syria now made refugees, millions have already gone into Europe shortly after the Russians arrived in Syria. And there is a possibility of millions more as the Assad regime closes in on the last holdout of the rebellion in Idlib province. And then,
Absolutely.
Of course, by removing Gaddafi, now you have a completely lawless country in Libya where African migrants from Africa are now streaming across the Mediterranean, many of them drowning on their way. And then we learn that the Europeans are actually in secret alliance with the incredibly repressive regime in Sudan, who are quite brutal towards African or immigrants coming from the south into Europe. So,
right. Another example we can point to in the news today is South Korea and North Korea. If the United States had not intervened and continued to occupy South Korea, I think the Korean people would have worked out their own differences a long time ago. There are real differences. There were and are real differences, but I'm not sure that without foreign interference it would have taken, 60 plus, almost 70 years for them to say, well, let's talk.
Well, that may be one of the few bright spots, although there's a lot of skepticism about whether or not Donald Trump cares about the details of any deal as long as he looks good. So one
of course.
Yeah, so you have to hold your breath on that one.
Right.
But again, I'm speaking with Mei Nai, who's a professor of history and the Lung Family Professor of Asian American Studies at Columbia University, a legal and political historian interested in questions of immigration, citizenship, and nationalism. She is the author of Impossible Subjects, Illegal Aliens and the Making of Modern America, The Lucky Ones, One Family, and the Extraordinary Invention of Chinese America. And her forthcoming book is The Chinese Question. So you mentioned earlier that quite often there are a lot of women and children in this caravan, which of course is being exaggerated as an invasion by Donald Trump, who's talking about, I mean, some of the charges that he's made about what's going on with these immigrants coming up. You know, one, he said that they could close down the country, but also at this rally on Saturday, he said, one of the reasons Democrats support immigrants and sanctuary cities is because the Democrats actually feel, and they are probably right, that all of these people pouring across are going to vote for Democrats, not for Republicans. I mean, on the surface, that's an absurd statement. I mean, how long does it take to even get citizenship or get a green card and then become a citizen if you come?
Right. It takes, well, once you have a green card, it takes 5 years to become a citizen.
Right.
But you know, that is what they're afraid of. I mean, that's why they're against not only undocumented migration, they're against refugees and asylees, but they're also against legal immigration. Because immigrants nowadays are more likely to vote for Democratic than Republicans. And there's a good reason for that.
Well, because
Republicans
he's insulted
are a party of nativists.
Right, but Trump has gone out of his way. I mean, George W. Bush, to be fair, Jorge Bush, remember, he made commercials in Spanish. He was actually got a big chunk of the Latino vote in this country. I think he got 40% or something. And then Romney got about 12% because he talked about self-deportation. But Donald Trump has started right out of the gate saying that Mexicans were rapists and murderers.
Right. That was the first one of the, that was the first speech he made, I believe, when
it
he announced candidacy.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So that may be a contributing factor. That would be a wild guess on my part. So, but just to touch on the women and children, though, there were recent reports of children being separated from their parents. What's going on there? That just seems so wrong.
Separated by whom?
I believe they're being separated by Border Patrol. The children were taken away from their parents in a recent influx.
Well, there was, going back several years, quite a large number of women and children who came from Central America and who asked for asylum when they entered the United States. And there were also a number of children or minors who came without any adults. They were called unaccompanied minors. And they're held in detention facilities near the border in very, very bad conditions as they await processing. So I think, you know, we have a whole system that is just really based on inhumane treatment of people. You know, to think that women with small children or with children who are, you know, under 14 years of age or any kind of threat to this country is just ludicrous on the face of it. So they don't care about children who are black and brown. It's the short end of it, I think.
According to the New York Times, more than 700 children have been taken from adults claiming to be their parents since October, and that includes more than 100 children under the age of 14. And that just seems so wrong, separating kids from their parents.
Oh, it's absolutely wrong. And what is the rationale for that?
Well, apparently for months now, members of Congress have been demanding answers from the administration about how many families are being separated as they are processed at these various border crossings along the southwest border, in part because the Trump administration has said that it was considering taking children from their parents as a way to deter migrants from coming here. So that may well be what's going on.
Well, their cruelty seems to be boundless. It's just shocking and really outrageous. And I hope that this caravan has brought attention to the problem, and it's certainly prompted the administration to make outrageous statements, which, you know, are baldly racist and willfully ignorant of the laws, our immigration and asylum laws in this country.
So what's going to happen with all of these people that were turned away at San Ysidro back into Tijuana? But many of them are literally camping on the doorstep of the immigration building there, which I guess is where they would process asylum claims. And, of course, of the 1,500 or so that set out from Central America, there's apparently about 300
right,
in the pipeline.
Right.
So presumably there'll be about 300 people converging on this building. Has the Trump administration literally stopped asylum? Or is it still on the books, in other words, that you can claim?
It's on the books, but, you know, I mean, we've been hearing reports for quite a while now that they don't take asylum requests from Mexicans seriously. You know, they're supposed to, anybody who presents himself or herself to an immigration officer and says, I want to apply for asylum, they have to process that person. And the news that we get from the border area is that they just routinely refuse to process anybody from Mexico. I mean, they could be fleeing the drug wars, right? They could be fleeing, you know, all kinds of situations. They're not, we should not assume that they are, quote-unquote, merely economic migrants. That was the line they used to refuse asylum to people from Haiti. They said they were not fleeing persecution, even though they were fleeing the Duvalier regime and other iterations of the dictatorship. They said they were merely economic migrants. So in many parts of the world, these are things that you can't really separate that clearly. So asylum operates by a different set of rules. It's stricter in that there has to be a reasonable fear that if they return to their home country, they will be persecuted on account of their religion or ideology or gender, etc. So it's a more complicated process. But the point here is that if they present, you know, the law says if they present themselves to an immigration officer, they're supposed to be able to make a claim. So it's not that we don't have it on the books. It's just that it's not practiced in an even-handed way, in an impartial way. You know, until President Obama restored diplomatic relations with Cuba, Cuban refugees had the most direct route to asylum. The rule was if you touched U.S. soil, you were in. They assumed if you're Cuban and you touched American soil, you were granted asylum. Right. So this is obviously a very politically biased implementation of a law that is supposed to be much more neutral in terms of you know, what it means to be fleeing from a repressive regime.
And, of course, that contrasts with the Haitians that you mentioned from nearby Caribbean island who
exactly.
aren't treated the same way. So at this point, the Homeland Security Secretary, Kirstjen Nielsen, is more or less suggesting that this is all people are being coached and this is some kind of form of theater. And she said on Wednesday, "We will enforce the immigration laws as set forth by Congress. If you enter our country illegally, you have broken the law and will be referred to for prosecution. If you make a false immigration claim, you have broken the law and will be referred to for prosecution. If you assist or coach an individual in making a false immigration claim, you have broken the law and will be referred for prosecution." So there's this kind of notion that all this is happening because a bunch of activists are coaching people to take this long journey, a dangerous journey through Mexico to the border, to gin up some kind of form of political theater. That seems to be how the administration is dealing with it.
Well, that's absolutely correct, and it's ridiculous. I mean, there is an element of theater, quote-unquote, if you want to use that word. It's, I think, unprecedented that you would have such a large number of people traveling together and announce in advance their intention to request asylum. It doesn't alter in any way the fact that they may have entirely legitimate claims, and the only way you will know if they have a legitimate claim is to process them, right? You cannot decide before you've spoken to anybody or had a hearing that they have no claim or that they're lying or that they've been coached. So this is just, I think, more tough talk on the part of the administration. And it's really sad because statistically there might be a couple of people in there who are making false claims. But I think on the whole, you know, they're coming from an area of Central America that is rife with violence and people are terrorized and they need to get out of that situation. So that's the part that the administration doesn't want to talk about.
And just in closing, of course, Vice President Mike Pence is down on the border at Calexico today as a part of this theater, I guess, to rile up the base of Trump's supporters who are told that all of these Latinos are coming up to take their jobs away. And I mean, it's just, well.
Well, that's the real political theater that's going on. I mean, if the word theater is to suggest fiction, mm-hmm. right, and not something true, then that's the real theater that's going on, is this ongoing appeal to what they believe is the nativism and racism of their base. You know, he goes somewhere and they all start chanting, "Build the wall." I mean, this is the real theater that's going on. And you know what? Every time this happens, you know, I just have to wonder if Robert Mueller is getting closer, because a lot of this is also a theater of distraction.
Well, Maynard, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Lovely talking to you, Ian.
Well, thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Maynard, who's a professor of history and the Lung Family Professor of Asian American Studies at Columbia University, a legal and political historian interested in questions of immigration, citizenship, and nationalism. She's the author of Impossible Subjects, Illegal Aliens and the Making of Modern America, The Lucky Ones, One Family, and the Extraordinary Invention of Chinese America. And her forthcoming book is The Chinese Question. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into how Trump is force-feeding the deep state while claiming the deep state is out to get him.